Welcome to Grand Rapids Daily. Thanks for starting your day with us.
Good morning, everyone. Before we get into the news today, let's talk about this weather. I stepped out this morning downtown, and it was a brisk 43 degrees.
Yeah, and with that east-northeast wind around 9 miles per hour, it actually feels closer to 38. We've got broken clouds right now, and the humidity's sitting pretty high at 86%, so it's definitely a damp, chilly start to the day.
Sunrise was at 6:43 a.m. this morning, and the sun will set tonight at 8:37 p.m., so we are enjoying those longer spring days. But the real story is the temperature roller coaster we're riding over the next 30 hours.
It really is. If you're looking to get outside, Sunday afternoon is your window. By 3 p.m. Sunday, we should hit 52 degrees, and then it shoots up to 66 degrees by 6 p.m., peaking at 67 Sunday evening.
That's a massive swing. And you know, we really need a stretch of calm, predictable weather. It's been a rough month for parts of Michigan with those severe weather events.
Exactly. We've had parts of the state under emergency declarations due to storms recently. The National Weather Service office here in Grand Rapids has been working overtime monitoring regional hazards. It just goes to show how crucial accurate, hyper-local forecasting is for our area.
Absolutely. So enjoy that 67-degree peak on Sunday evening, because it will get overcast Sunday night, and by Monday morning, we're dropping back down into the 40s. Whiplash City.
Classic Michigan spring. You've got your winter coat in the morning and a t-shirt by dinner time. All right, coming up on today's show, we're diving deep into Michigan politics. Our state is one of only two in the country that shields the governor and legislature from public records requests, and we're looking at what the current candidates are promising to do about it. We're starting today with a topic that might sound a bit dry at first, public records laws, but it actually cuts right to the core of how our state government operates, and more importantly, what they are legally allowed to hide from us. The Detroit News recently ran a piece titled Q&A, Michigan Governor Candidates on Making Themselves Subject to FOIA, and this is a long-standing point of contention here in Michigan.
It really is. For those who might not be aware of just how unusual our system is, Michigan is currently one of only two states in the entire country, the other being Massachusetts, that fully exempts both the governor's office and the state legislature from the Freedom of Information Act, or FOIA.
Right. In 48 other states, journalists, watchdog groups, and everyday citizens can request documents, emails, and records to see exactly how decisions are being made at the highest levels. But here in Michigan, our top elected officials are legally shielded from that level of scrutiny. And as we gear up for the next gubernatorial election, candidates are inevitably being asked if they are finally going to change that.
Exactly. The Detroit News reached out to the major candidates, and we are seeing some interesting responses. On the Democratic side, Jocelyn Benson has pledged that if elected, she would voluntarily comply with FOIA requests. And on the Republican side, Tom Leonard has stated he would issue an executive directive to bring the governor's office under FOIA.
Voluntary compliance and executive directives. That sounds great on the campaign trail. But if you have been following Michigan politics for a while, you are probably feeling a strong sense of deja vu right now, because we have heard this exact tune before.
You are referring to Governor Gretchen Whitmer's 2018 campaign.
I am. Back in 2018, candidate Whitmer made a very clear promise to voluntarily open her office to FOIA if she won. But once she took office, that voluntary compliance never really materialized. It is the classic gap between campaigning and governing. When you are running, transparency is a great talking point. When you are in the hot seat, suddenly those internal emails and draft documents look a lot more sensitive.
And that is the inherent flaw in relying on voluntary commitments or even executive directives. An executive directive can be reversed by the next person in office or quietly ignored when a particularly damaging request comes in. It is not the same as a legally binding statute that mandates compliance. Which brings us to the legislative effort to actually fix the law. There has been a bipartisan push to subject the governor and the legislature to FOIA. Senate Bills 1 and 2 were introduced to do exactly that, and they actually passed the state Senate.
Let's dig into the details of Senate Bills 1 and 2.
these weren't just token pieces of legislation. They were carefully crafted to expand FOIA to the governor, the lieutenant governor, and the legislature, while still including certain exemptions for constituent communications, which is a standard protection so everyday citizens can email their representative without fear of their personal issues becoming public.
Right. Constituent privacy is always the big shield lawmakers hide behind when fighting FOIA. They say they cannot open their emails because a constituent might email them about a sensitive medical issue or a problem with their unemployment benefits. But Senate Bills 1 and 2 explicitly carved out protections for those exact scenarios.
Exactly. The bills removed that excuse entirely. And that is largely why they passed the Senate with such strong bipartisan support. Lawmakers looked at it and said, this protects the public's right to know without violating individual privacy. It was a very reasonable compromise.
But then it hits the House, and Speaker Matt Hall pumps the brakes. He blocks the bills and introduces this HEAT plan, which stands for Historic Ethics and Transparency. Now, the HEAT plan includes some valid ideas, like strengthening financial disclosure rules and creating a new ethics committee. But critics argue that Hall is using these broader, more complicated reforms as a poison pill.
It is the classic perfect being the enemy of the good strategy. By insisting that FOIA expansion be tied to a massive, sweeping ethics overhaul, you guarantee that nothing passes. Because suddenly you are debating 10 different controversial issues instead of just one straightforward transparency bill.
And let's be real about the political dynamics here. When a Speaker of the House blocks a bill that has bipartisan Senate support, it is usually because the members of his own caucus do not want to take a tough vote. It is easier for the Speaker to play the bad guy and stall the bill in committee than to put it on the floor and force representatives to publicly vote against transparency.
Right. It gives everyone cover. They can go back to their districts and say they support transparency and the HEAT plan without actually having to subject their own emails to public scrutiny.
And this brings us back to the gubernatorial race. Jocelyn Benson and Tom Leonard are out there making these promises. But as voters, how do we distinguish between genuine commitment and campaign rhetoric? Whitmer promised it in 2018 and did not deliver. Why should we believe the 2026 crop of candidates?
It is a tough sell. I think for a lot of transparency advocates, the only acceptable answer from a candidate at this point is a commitment to aggressively lobby the legislature to pass a binding statute. Voluntary compliance is a band-aid. An executive directive is a temporary fix. We need the law itself to change.
It is frustrating because this is one of those issues where public polling consistently shows massive support for reform. Voters want transparency, but the people with the power to enact that transparency are the exact same people who would lose their shield of secrecy. It is a massive conflict of interest.
And it is why Michigan remains at the very bottom of national rankings for government integrity and transparency. We are a national outlier, and frankly, it is embarrassing. The fact that we are grouped with Massachusetts as the absolute worst in the country on this specific metric should be a wake-up call. So as we watch this gubernatorial race unfold, it is worth keeping a close eye on this issue. Will the pressure mount enough to force actual legislative action before the end of the term? Or will we just get another round of campaign promises that evaporate the moment the winner takes the oath of office? We will certainly be tracking it here.
All right, let's hit a few more local stories real quick before we wrap up today.
Sounds good. What do we have?
Well, it is officially prom season here in West Michigan, and I have to say, one of my favorite local news traditions is scrolling through the MLive photo galleries.
Oh, it is the best. It is such a pure slice of community life. And they had a great feature on Grand Rapids Montessori's prom, which was held Saturday night at the Goyi Center downtown.
The theme was Fly Me to the Moon, which is just a classic. They had stars, planets, and a massive moon backdrop. But what I find really interesting is the culture of the school itself. Grand Rapids Montessori is a public school within GRPS, but it is built entirely around student-led learning.
Right. And when you have a student body that is used to taking the reins on their education, that translates directly into how they plan events.
they don't just hire a planner. The kids are in the trenches designing the aesthetic and figuring out the logistics. It makes the night that much more meaningful for them.
Absolutely. The GOEY Center is such an incredible historic venue, too. It really elevated the whole fly me to the moon concept.
And they were not the only ones celebrating this weekend. Forest Hills Eastern also had their prom, and they took a very different but equally modern approach.
They did. They held theirs at the Thousand Oaks Golf Club in Ada, and the theme was Golden Hour style.
Which is so perfectly 2026. Golden Hour is that time just before sunset when the lighting is absolutely perfect for photography. It is a theme built entirely around the aesthetic of social media and getting the perfect shot.
It really shows how much pop culture and digital trends influence these high school milestones now. It is not just about the dance anymore. It is about the visual documentation of the night. But MLive was there capturing it all, and it is just great to see local news outlets dedicating resources to documenting these positive community events. It is a nice break from the heavy political news.
Finally, we want to take a moment to note the passing of a community member. The Republican American and Legacy.com have published the obituary for Deborah Esposito.
Deborah was born in 1954 and passed away this year, in 2026. She was a resident of Grand Rapids. Our thoughts are with her family and loved ones during this difficult time. You can find the full obituary and details on services via the link in our show notes.
And that is going to do it for us today on Grand Rapids Daily. We covered a lot of ground, from the ongoing battle for government transparency in Lansing to the lighter side of spring with our local high school proms.
It is always a good mix here.
Thank you so much for starting your day with us. If you want to dive deeper into any of the stories we talked about, including those MLive prom photo galleries, be sure to check out the show notes for all the links.
And do not forget to enjoy that brief spike of warm weather on Sunday evening. Get outside and soak up that 67-degree high, because Monday is going to bring us right back down to reality.
I will definitely be out on the porch for that golden hour. We will catch you back here tomorrow with more local news and updates. Until then, stay informed, Grand Rapids.